You hear this a lot, actually. People that jump off buildings or whatever, they always regret it right when they jump.
Really?
Yeah, almost always.
How do they know if they don't live?
Well, we only hear from the ones that live. Did you have any of that?
No. No, I really wanted to die. At the time.
Welcome to another episode of The Gary Hour. I'm your host, Gary Levitt. This week, I talk to comedian Mr. Daniel Parafan. If you like comedy, and if you like analyzing and talking about depression and suicide, you're going to love this episode. I think we accomplished the aim of this podcast and talk about some heavy issues with humor and levity. This episode is brought to you by Future Moments, makers of mobile apps for content creation. If you're a musician, a podcaster, a voiceover artist, or a filmmaker, or just someone that makes videos on their phone, go to the App Store and search for Future Moments because they have an app that'll make your life easier and your production so much better. Thanks for listening. Check out the show notes for links and enjoy. Loud enough?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Welcome.
What's going on?
Daniel Parafan.
What's up? Thanks for inviting me to this podcast.
Yeah, thanks for doing it, man. You are a very funny, high-energy stand-up comedian.
I try.
I've seen you kill before. I've seen you destroy a room.
You've also seen me bomb, too.
So. I have. Oh, I've seen everybody bomb, yeah, but I haven't seen everybody destroy. Myself included, you know.
Jesus Christ.
Yes, we all bomb.
Every day, pretty much.
But I was curious to bring you here because you're one of the more friendly people in the comedy scene. You are all around town all the time. I always see you. And you also have this like mystery about you.
What do you mean?
I don't know. Like you seem so well adjusted. And then there was that Facebook post where you tried to commit suicide and were in an institution.
All right. Fair enough.
And I was totally shocked by that.
Well, you know, a person can have two sides of the coin. I mean, that's not crazy to say. I had, I was depressed for a while, and then I thought that doing something like that would be fine, and it wasn't. Not to mention the, what do you want me to say? It's weird because I can be a normal person.
Yeah.
But sometimes you just get depressed.
Yeah.
It happens.
Totally. I get depressed. Not everyone gets depressed. I get depressed.
I was just stupid about it.
Mm-hmm. Was it a particular thing that happened?
Not really. I think everything just culminated. I mean, at that time, I was losing a bunch of weight. I used to be like 300 pounds, and I lost a bunch of weight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think psychologically, I had a difficult time adjusting to it.
And
I didn't think I would. Yeah.
Yeah, well, do you think there's something chemical like losing so much weight? It's a lot of weight.
Yeah, real fast, and it's plausible. I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility.
How many pounds did you lose that time?
Like 160.
Wow, that's like a whole person.
Basically.
You lost a whole person.
Yeah, yeah.
You like split, you're out of mitosis, and then
the other person. But it's not, I mean, it's not out of the realm of possibility, the psychological effect that happened, or even the chemical effects. I mean, it just happens. I think as comics, we're all prone to some form of depression, and we're all prone to some form of angst. That's the whole point of why we do this in the first place, right?
Yeah, in an ideal world, you know, to turn the sadness into happiness and
exactly.
joy. Yeah.
Which some of us do, but I think at the time, I just didn't handle it well. It was a weird weight to carry, ironically. And it was something I did. I regret it. No, I lost the respect of a lot of my peers.
Really?
Yeah, honestly.
Who would lose respect for you?
I'm not going to name names, but you know, I did. I can feel the difference.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it did come as a shock to me because you seem so jovial. And but that just goes to show there is two sides to everybody. Some of the most depressed people are the most jovial in public.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
Even flamboyancy, I mean, just in general, I use flamboyancy as a defense mechanism sometimes. I'm like, in the sense of like, where I know that if you're flamboyant, it's almost like a defense mechanism. You're more playful. People are like, oh, whatever, he's cool.
Right. That makes sense. So it was around the time that you lost a bunch of weight, huh?
Actually, it happened almost exactly it's almost like a nexus point. Yes.
Nexus point, huh? So maybe there is something. I wish I knew if scientifically that were true.
Yeah, if we can find a way. I mean, but I've looked up, I mean, just on a lark, I've looked up different people who have done what I did, and there's a psychological difference between each person. It's odd.
Yeah.
Because you're changing the physiological, so it's only going to naturally happen.
Right, you're changing your whole chemistry.
That's what it is. Yeah. As I mentioned, just self-perception is a big part of it, so let's be honest, that affects you psychologically.
Mm-hmm. But you would think your self-perception would be improved since you got down to the weight you wanted.
It did, but it didn't. I don't know how to explain it. I mean, it's just a radical change so fast, which admittedly I done because I wanted to just lose weight that quickly. I think it was just something that broke in me. I was like, no, I'm done.
And, did you do it naturally or?
Oh, yes and no. I mean, I didn't take any pills or anything. That's what you're implying. It was more like exercise and diet, but they were extreme exercising, extreme diet. I was working out like 4 hours a day.
Wow.
And I was dieting to the point of like a deficit of caloric intake to mm-hmm. the point of extremism.
Yeah, because maybe it's not good to go down that fast.
It's plausible. I mean, it's not. I mean, clearly there was some kind of psychological aspect to it that I wasn't able to handle.
Yeah, and if you're doing like an 8-ball of Coke a day to get down in weight,
I didn't do that.
That's probably not good either.
Nothing in that sense. But yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with you. I mean, this whole thing was, it was difficult, and it was one of those things where you kind of deal and you're like, oh, fuck me, Freddy. Should not have done that.
Mm-hmm. What, do you mind talking about what exactly happened? Like, do you remember the thoughts going on?
No, I just remember I got depressed for a while, and it was just difficult just to even look in a mirror. I mean, I'll honestly, like, it was just hard to even see yourself.
Like self-hatred kind of thing?
Not even that. It was something else. It was just hard to accept that this is your new image. Imagine if one day you're going from one weight, and literally almost a month or two later, I was 50 pounds less.
I would be happy. Pounds,
it's odd. Not even like I dropped 50 pounds in close to a month.
Mm-hmm.
That was a difficult thing to handle psychologically. You would think you'd be happy, and I was.
Yeah, because you were trying for that.
Yeah, yeah. And then I had done something I'd never done. I started womanizing, which was a blast, admittedly. But
I'm sure you've got some stories, some dating stories.
Oh, tons are great.
That must be a trip too, because all of a sudden the reaction you're getting from people in general is
different. You get more female attention, which I'd never gotten before, and so it was on. Or at least I have gotten, but I've never gotten it to that point.
Right.
That sense of you know, male acceptance, where I mean, just and I think anyone listening to this, especially if you're a guy, the sense of romantic acceptance is high. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Goes on.
Yeah, and it changes how you feel.
Yeah.
But that is also a good thing.
It was. I mean, not really. There's an underlying factor of like misogyny. There was toxic masculinity because I was working out so hard. I mean, chemically, I think I just built up a lot of endorphins. And
do you have like testosterone rushing through your body?
That's what it was, I think. I'm not excusing my behavior. I never did anything that would be unacceptable, but I...
Did you start hanging out at sports bars?
No, I definitely just picked up women to sleep with them. That was it.
Yeah.
That was something I did without... I mean, just...
But there's nothing wrong with that.
I know. I think it's not, but it's still something that... Looking back, I'm like, I could have just met some of these girls and just dated them. That would have been nice.
Well, if it's consensual, what does it matter? Maybe they don't want to date.
Good point, right? Yeah. I didn't know their perception, but that's something I didn't really get to know them. It would be like... I would sleep with women on the first date.
Mm-hmm.
That was definitely my thing for a while. It was just like hooking up with someone on the first date. And if not, it didn't matter to me at all.
Right. Well, it would make sense, like, if you were getting all this extra attention you never got before, that you want to make up for lost time.
Essentially, yeah. But I didn't, again, I don't really, I'm not praising those actions. If anything, I'm kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? If anything, I'm condoning them.
Yeah, why? Is this like some leftover 1950s stuff where you're like...
No, I don't know what it was. It was just something, I've never gotten that attention. It was exciting, it was fun.
Yeah.
It was new, but... Looking back, I'm like, I could have gotten to know a lot of these girls where it was I would have preferred to date some of them, just because I've never really had a long-term girlfriend before. So it'd be nice to like get to know someone and connect with a couple people.
Right.
It did a lot of damage, I think, to me emotionally, because I didn't really understand what I was doing. It was more like I was just jumping into something. I felt like a teenager, basically.
Right.
And this is back when I was like 28 or something. So like mm-hmm. it was
How old are you now?
Who knows? Anyway, so
it was last year.
Yeah, yeah. It was like it was a new me.
Yeah,
and I wasn't ready for it, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the problem.
You think maybe all the testosterone from working out?
Possibly. I mean, there are a lot of factors. I mean, any underlying factors. I mean, psychologically, there are like there's testosterone. There's a sense of validation. There was a change in me physiologically.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were just so many things that played into it, and I think that's what it was. It was too much at once. I wasn't ready for it, for sure. I think if looking back, I could change anything, I'd go a little slower.
Right. You think you were like getting high on the buzz of all the attention?
Kind of. I'll be honest with you. But it is what it is. There's nothing I can do now about it. But it was very interesting. Of like, oh shit, you can kind of see why people, besides the health effects, which were, of course, it was unhealthy to go that fast. You're not supposed to lose that weight that much fast. But part of it was the emotional attachment to everything, where you're just not ready for that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Not ready for all the changes?
Kind of. I wasn't ready for anything in general. I wasn't ready for I was going from one personality to the other, and I wasn't ready for any of it.
Did you kind of stop working out after you lost the weight?
A little bit. Part of it was just because I was tired, and then part of it was I'd just done with it. You know what I mean? I was just like, mm-hmm. This is it. I'm done.
Well, and I wonder if it's just a chemical withdrawal or something, because I know addicts will exchange their addictions for running. Like, you get all these endorphins from...
Yeah.
Aerobic exercise,
yeah, yeah,
and they're similar to drug use. So maybe you're just getting high on all these endorphins.
It's from possible. Out. I mean, I don't know. I can't say the exact psychiatric reasons for it. I mean, I'm not a doctor anyway, but I can tell you my experience. I mean, have you used before heroin?
No, I just play one on a podcast.
I've never done hard drugs before, which is like fun,
mm-hmm.
the idea of it. But I've never even been attracted to the idea of hard drugs. It's kind of like, eh.
Mm.
I just think it's too much.
Yeah. What's your? I do want to talk to you about more details, but let's get away from that for a sec. What's your background? Were you born here?
I was born here. My family's from Colombia,
mm-hmm.
so they're South American. Yeah, mom and dad. They're both from Colombia. They met here. Funny enough, they're cousins. It's kind of gross.
Really? Like first cousins?
I swear to God. They're like fourth cousins or something.
Oh, that's like in the safety zone.
Is it?
Yeah, I think so.
It's still weird. What am I going to say about that? I'm like, oh, they're cousins. They made me. I can't really knock it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Well, they're keeping in the family, which is kind of nice.
Yeah, yeah. At least it's safer. They're more used to it.
I think the danger is, like, you're allowed to marry your first cousin here.
What?
In the States, yeah. It's legal.
No, you're not. Shut up. You serious?
Yeah.
No way. I don't believe you.
Yeah. Didn't Jerry Lewis do it?
He's rich. It's a little different when you're rich.
He could afford to marry his first
cousin.
Yeah,
yeah. When you're rich, I feel like you can do whatever you want. Ew. Can you marry your first cousin here?
Yeah.
Ew.
Because it's not dangerous.
Ew.
Well, it's a little dangerous.
It's like some percent. Oh, gross, man. I'm okay with not doing that.
You just relax. Daniel's lying down on the couch with
what,
the mic.
It's that's a soft awesome. Couch. I'm not complaining.
That's good. You're the first lying down. Now I really feel like a shrink.
Yeah, yeah.
Now I feel like I'm on the spot.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, so were you born here?
Yeah. Yeah, I was born here. I was raised in Jackson Heights, Queens. I have a twin sister. And
you have a twin sister?
Yeah, yeah. We were raised in a little impoverished neighborhood, Jackson Heights, Queens. It was It was interesting to say the least.
Where's your twin sister?
Now or yeah. like in general?
I'm not asking for personal reasons.
Well, she, and where is she? Like yeah. physically, yeah, she lives with my mom. Well, she's going back to school. She's trying to get her degree mm-hmm. again, or her master's or whatever. And then
she's not a comedian.
No. If anything, she's a normie, which is kind of fun.
Yeah, well, that's kind of nice.
Yeah, it's a blast. She had we're different personality types. I think when someone told me once, but like the thing about twins is that they develop almost polar opposite personality types.
Hmm. Do you feel? I kind of wish I had a twin just to experience it for like a month. What's it like? Do you feel this chemical?
You have connection? Someone there. I think as kids we were, and I don't know how open you are to this idea, or anyone even listening with it. It's gonna be like that's stupid. But as kids, we used to feel each other's pain. It was weird. We were like five or six.
Vicariously, you can.
Kind of. I remember her and I would exchange stories all the time of like, "Hey, did you fall today?" And she's like, "Yeah." I was like, "Oh, I felt it."
Wow.
Shit like that. Like,
I believe that.
We would have that multiple times where it happened. And I'm just like, I don't know. I mean, what do you want to say like about that? That's just like something kids do. I'm not sure if it was in our heads, but it was like
I totally something. Believe that. I've had that happen where like I felt something happen to a friend and I've called them and they're like, yeah, that did. It's strange.
It's kind of an odd thing, isn't mm-hmm. it? I don't know. Again, I don't know what the...
It's the fourth dimension.
Oh, God. It's like the deep spiritual connection to everything around you. I don't want to talk about that. That's just a different thing altogether. But I don't know if it was childhood folly and we're just being like, yeah, whatever. But I remember we would have those conversations all the time as kids.
Yeah.
Constantly.
You don't feel it anymore with her?
No, it's on. I mean, we're just older now.
Oh, I felt penetrated yesterday. Did you have sex?
Ew, gross.
That would get kind of awkward.
My pee-pee hole got wider. I don't...
Did you do anal yesterday?
Yeah. Ew. But there's that thing, and I feel like, again, this is a different barrier. I don't want to go into it deeply, but... For some reason, I've heard that, you know, children are more open to a spiritual connection than adults.
That does not surprise me.
It's odd where kids are more receptive to something else than if there is paranormal activity to whatever degree. I don't know what you believe in. I don't know what mm-hmm. you one way or the other. I'm not saying it exists. I'm just saying if there is some level of it, then children are the ones more receptive to that.
Oh, acceptance. Definitely. Well, kids are more open in general. That's
because
why
they're deeper to the spectrum. Yeah, exactly.
They could learn quicker.
100%.
Adults develop these walls and borders.
Oh, 100%. Because you're blocking yourself off to the idea of it first.
Mm. You're like, here, check out this app. And they're like, what do I do?
Yeah, I'm not ready for this.
And kids are like, boop, boop, press buttons.
Yeah,
and,
exactly. They're open for it right away.
Yeah.
It's a very interesting idea where the whole thing works.
Call that beginner's mind.
Yeah. Is that what it is?
Yeah, beginner's mind. That's why a management of a restaurant or a company will often just, if they want to change things, when new management comes, they wipe everyone out and they get rid of everybody.
That makes sense because I think we've all seen examples of it, of like, someone with a cup, if you have your cup is full, mm-hmm. you can't fill it with more.
Right.
But if it's an empty cup, you could fill the cup up with the ideas.
Yeah, and if you're used to doing things a certain way, it's hard for you to...
Change it over.
It's harder to unlearn than to learn.
To learn, makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, it's that's a goal, to stay in that beginner's mind with things. You ever take a break from stand-up, like a week, and not do a show or a mic?
Rarely. I've done a week or two, maybe every 2 or 3 years.
Mm-hmm. I did that recently. And
did you?
Yeah, and it was really nice.
No, I don't. You know what it is? I don't really do anything past stand-up. So it's become a lot of my life. It's become what I've done.
Mm-hmm. I like it. You're out every night.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just don't do anything else at nighttime besides that.
Yeah, but you know how it gets with a bit that you're working on? It has a life. It's like a human life. It's like starts off in its infancy. Then it gets really ripe and it's like perfect. It's in its prime. And then if you keep doing it, it goes and it loses something. It loses that charm or that magic if you do it too much.
No, I mean, for me, it's more of an idea of getting better. Mm-hmm. I passed the point of romance a long time ago. And now it's become a sense of discipline where I'm working hard constantly.
Mm-hmm. How long have you been at it?
A couple years.
Let's just stay vague. That's pretty vague.
Yeah, well, I mean.
Maybe let's go with a few, since a couple is two, where a few is three.
Fine,
more.
A few years. Is that better?
I know you've been doing it longer than me.
How long have you been doing it for?
a little more than 5 years.
Yeah, but they're longer than you.
You have, right?
But I also don't have much to show for it. I have like one or two credits, and this overwhelming sense of dread.
Mm-hmm. What's the dread about?
I don't know. I mean, stand-up is fun because it's an art form. It's not.
Yeah, totally.
It's not. You don't really get paid for it, and I've never wanted to get paid for it. I never wanted to make a ton of money in it. The whole point of doing stand-up or comedy or any art form really is to make something without. Who cares about the monetary value? Don't think that I'm not stupid. I know the worth of something, but it's I'm not. Also, I'm not foolish either. I'm not under any guise of sense of like, this is my dream. This is just, I don't see it like that. And I don't think anyone should. I think you should see it as more something you do.
For the process.
Exactly.
You enjoy the process.
Fuck the I mean, fuck the phrase, the process, but just the idea of like, this is what I do. I don't do this for a dream of being famous. I do this because it's who I am and what I do.
Right. But you are working towards getting better at it.
Absolutely. And each year I do admittedly make more money at it than the year before. Right. I mean, I went from the first couple of years, I would go from negative money to started making a profit. And then each year I feel like I make more and more money. Mm-hmm. And again, it's still dismal. The money I make is nothing, but it's still money.
Right. But it's
a few $1,000 here and there.
Yeah. And there's also like a big jump of like, once you get some notoriety, then all of a sudden you're
making. Of course. You get buzz and people kind of flow around you, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
You get a following of friends, you get a following of people, things of that nature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When did you figure out you wanted to do stand-up?
I was 7, and I used to watch 7. Comedy Central. And I would watch these guys on TV, and I just knew like that's what I wanted to do more than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Who was it that inspired you?
I mean, I would just watch Comic View. I'd watch all these comics looking back. I remember their bits and like things they would do, the way it was polished. It was an interesting dynamic of how they set it up. And I don't know. It's a feeling in your heart almost. You're like, that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm.
That thing he's doing right now is the thing I'm going to do.
Yeah. Did anyone, him or her. Were you funny in school?
No, I was never the super funny guy. I was just always the guy. I always tried to be silly and goofy and stuff like that. I did that. I was always the goofy guy in a group, or I was the guy that would say crazy shit in the group. I was never the funny guy.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the funny guy is one of those guys where they those are the guys that never do stand up.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. I mean, I feel like they're the ones that always end up like handyman somewhere in like Wichita, Texas, or whatever. Like they don't. They're the ones, they never do it. I've met a bunch of funny guys and they just don't do it. I think the people who become comics, sketch writers, the whole nine, they're the ones that were, the goofballs, or they're the ones that, even the quiet ones, they mm-hmm. become the comics. It's never the funny guy.
Interesting.
Ever.
Yeah.
The funny guy or girl is never the comic. Ever, which is kind of odd. You would think the other way around, but it's always the other people, the goofballs and the quiet ones become the comics and the sketch writers and the writers in general.
Were you trying to get your twin sister to do something with you?
I mean, I've asked her if she ever wanted to try something with me, but she's always turned it down. It's just not her thing.
Yeah.
Plus, I mean, I know I'm not stupid. I mean, I know how long stand-up takes and how hard it is and how many years of development it takes just to even get a baseline idea of what is truly funny. It takes years. I mean, admittedly. And I feel like I didn't start getting laughs until like 4 years in, you know what I mean? Like that kind of weird thing where now it's consistent. I can say I consistently deliver a certain product, whether or not it's amazing, it's different to the person perceiving it. But, I mean,
right. That, you reach new standard levels.
Yeah. 100%. And I can say like, it's almost like I talked to someone about this one day. I'm like, where I feel it's a scale, like you would pay to see me. I can say you would pay to see me and you would leave happy, but you might not pay to see me again.
That's where you feel like you're at.
Exactly. And before though, I was at the, you wouldn't pay to see me. And before that is you wouldn't see me. Like there's levels to it. So the next level is you pay to see me and you would pay to see me again.
Yeah. Do you remember your first time?
Yeah.
How'd it go?
Oh, it was terrible.
Open mic?
It was god awful. Yeah, of course.
What happened? You didn't do well in your first time?
No, I did okay. It was, I was wearing these, aviator glasses, and I wore them on stage, and everyone laughed. It was a weird, like, stupid. I don't know why I wore them. They were so stupid.
Yeah.
I came up with, like, Chris Stefano and Nico White, all those guys. Mm-hmm. Nico White, Pudge Fernandez, a few guys that quit, too.
I'm sure,
yeah. I'm not sure if you know Jason Salmon and anyone else that... Even Pete Davidson was around, too, at that time, too. He was doing Broadway, and he was...
Broadway Comedy Club.
Yeah, he was doing Broadway Comedy Club, and he was, like, bouncing around and getting seen by people, too.
Well, he's pretty young. I mean, he wouldn't...
At the time, he was, like, 10 years younger than I was. Well, he's still young now, but, like, yeah. He was even more young back then. I mean, clearly.
Wow. He must have started real early.
Yeah, I think he was, like, 13 or something.
Wow.
Yeah, he was real young. And, of course, the story passed around that his dad died 9/11. It was, like, a big deal for him emotionally.
Yeah. That's good. Gets people talking.
That's part of it.
Yeah.
You can get a backstory. People can sum you up. You're like, who is this person?
You still got to be funny.
True.
Yeah.
But still, though.
So you started in New York.
Yeah. Yeah, I started here. Little club that's not open around now, Laugh Lounge.
Mm-hmm.
And that club shut down.
What were you? Were you barking for spots?
Yeah, I would do a show here and there. I'd do bringer shows. I would do a thing. The owner one time was like, I'll watch you, come by, like that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
It was one of those clubs. It was an urban club. It was one of the few urban clubs in New York City at the time. And
where,
now
where
there was
it?
Like a few, but not anymore.
Where was Laugh Lounge?
It was downtown by the Lower East Side on Rivington. It was like 172 Rivington or something like that.
Uh-huh.
Now it's a restaurant, but at the time it was a club. It was a good place to...
And you said it was an urban club.
Yeah.
So as a Colombian, where do you stand in that?
What do you want to say? I mean, what do you mean?
Like, do you fit in? Or are you considered an urban comic?
I mean, how would I? I don't really think my material is urban. I feel like it fits more to the alternative scene / the independent scene / the club scene, where I could fit in those sectors. Urban scene's a little harder, but not impossible. For me, whenever I'm doing an urban room, I always feel like I...
Can you define urban comedy for listeners?
I wouldn't know how to do it. I mean, there's just so many sectors of stand-up
mm-hmm.
where I think the average person wouldn't be able to break it down. But of course, we can if you say something. There's, in my interpretation of the New York City comedy scene, there's the independent scene,
mm-hmm.
urban scene, there's the alt scene, there's deep alt, and there's club scene.
Right.
Where I think that's
how it breaks down. And then each club has its own... kind of thing.
And of course, each club has, yeah. even the club scene, like, has breaks down a little bit of, like, a little more open to new ideas, et cetera, et cetera. I mean, what we would interpret as alternative is just more modern comedy that's not meant for general audiences. And what I would interpret as club comedy is something that's meant for a wide range of audiences, which it's not their fault half the time, because some of these people get no... stand up at all. I mean, we hear dick jokes every day, right? So after a while, you get tired of it. And the evolution is you get tired of a dick joke.
Right.
And then you kind of go, I don't want to talk about dicks anymore. I'm going to talk about tables. Like, because you're annoyed by so many dick jokes because there's only so many variations on dick shows you can
right.
do. So you start joking about tables, and people are like, I don't want to hear jokes about tables. But some people have also been bombarded by comedy, don't want to hear dick jokes, and they kind of go, oh, jokes about tables? That's refreshing. Like that. That's the idea of alternative.
Yeah, well, it depends on how much comedy you've been exposed to.
Exactly, that too. Independent, I would say, is more the bar scene show or more the independent shows that are out there. Club scenes are all the clubs, of course. Urban scenes are more like, oh, God, and it's just difficult to say, but it's more like, I feel like...
It's more high energy.
Kind of.
More interactive.
Yeah, yeah,
very
yeah.
common. People yell back.
You tend to have black rooms. You tend to have Hispanic rooms. You tend to be in hood areas, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
They tend to be a little... The audience tends to be a little tougher. The material that would work there would work in a club and independent room, but not necessarily an alternative or deep alt room. Deep alt room, of course, I would designate as things that are just super off the grid. You think Adult Swim.
Right, right.
Adult Swim is a perfect label for like a deep alt room.
Where it kind of blurs the line between comedy and maybe performance art.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I think that's how comedy's broken down in
the stand. That might be the polar opposite of a urban room.
Yeah, very plausible.
Try
but
to do
it doesn't
that.
Mean it wouldn't work. It's different.
Yeah, it would have to work just somehow.
Yeah, there's some sort. I mean, it's very hard to do all it's difficult as a comedian to be able to do all the rooms. Mm-hmm. Just because your style has to be evolving, or I mean, just the sheer difficulty in doing, being able to do any of those rooms is just.
Well, you have to be like multi personality.
Absolutely, yeah. Or at the very least, write material that's so relatable to everyone that you could. But even then, that's difficult.
Yeah. So where do you see yourself? I mean, you're a pretty high energy comic.
Yeah, I can. Like I said, I can do most, if not all, rooms. Save for maybe deep alt rooms, like. And even deep alt rooms, I can always do material that's macabre, and I feel like that works there. Mm-hmm. If I'm at a club, I would do more general stuff. If I'm in an independent room, I can flow between macabre and normal. If I'm in an urban room, I can't really do macabre, but I can do crowd work, and mm-hmm. I can do generic jokes. So I feel like I can do... I'm one of those comics that can do all rooms, but one of the reasons for that, which is also a detrimental factor, I don't necessarily have one style of voice. It constantly keeps evolving, which is not necessarily a good thing when you want to market yourself as a product. Mm-hmm. When you have one voice, one product, when you're an idea,
right,
you can sell that idea. But if you're constantly evolving, it's not a good thing necessarily.
Right. They say once people can imitate you easily, then you're on to something.
Exactly.
Yeah, like Jerry Seinfeld.
Exactly. What's the deal with me? Exactly. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, people... But it's almost like you have to make yourself a caricature. Simplify it.
Essentially,
you simplify your identity into this very simple caricature for stage.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah. Well, so you're working on a goal. Are you trying to become good at all rooms?
I mean, it wouldn't... be a bad thing mm-hmm. to be able to do all rooms. Mm-hmm. Why would that be bad?
No, it wouldn't be bad, but it's tricky because you're not like honing in on an
individual. That's the catch. But you're still performing and you're still developing an idea. I guess I just want to be as good as possible as a comedian and not break myself down into a certain factor. Even if it comes to being as general as possible, that would be fun and entertaining too.
With all these different rooms, do you think about it in terms of style or bits? Like, are there certain bits that work?
Both.
Both, uh-huh.
Yeah, but I don't have a discernible style either. But that goes back to the idea of why I can do all the rooms is because I don't necessarily have one style.
Every time I've seen you, you pretty much have a style.
Energy. Yeah, but that's it. And broken down into basic formatted jokes, it's not necessarily impressive though.
I think you're selling yourself short. Mm. I think you're high energy. A little, there's like a frantic energy.
Possibly.
But you're also very likable on stage, which is key.
I try.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes high energy people aren't likable and they have an antagonistic relationship with the audience.
Well, yeah, and I've done that before. I've delved into that before too. Mm-hmm.
Like when the audience isn't responding?
Yeah.
You lash out?
Yeah, I've done that before.
Yeah. What happened? You have a story there?
No. I mean, we've all dealt with hecklers, but nothing I can say this heckler stands out more than that one. I could just say this happened and that didn't.
Yeah.
I mean, even now I feel like a little more like laid back. In the second right now, like I'm like, hey, old chill, baby.
Well, yeah, you're lying down on the couch.
That's right. This is a very comfortable couch, by the way.
Did you ever get physically attacked or threatened?
Actually, one time I was in Virginia on a road gig with Max Cohen and Dave Zach, or I think he goes by Mike Holland now, and I'm not sure how often does it, but so we were on this guy had come up to us after the show, he's pretty drunk, mm-hmm. and he went to go stab Max Cohen.
With a knife?
Yeah, he didn't have a knife. He had a knife, but I think he missed it, and he did a stabbing motion into Max. It was and I had to pull him away from him. It was very like, it was one of those times it's like looking back, it was like, oh, that guy could have killed Max. There was like blood, and we did the road gig. It was blood on the ironing board. There was blood on the beds. Like shit had happened in that small road gig. It was crazy.
Wait, why was the guy upset at Max?
I don't remember. He was just trashed.
The guy was trashed.
Yeah.
And where was this blood?
Virginia Beach Comedy Club, I think at the
time. There was blood in the club?
No, there was blood in the hotel we stayed at.
Whoa.
Yeah, it was insane.
Like in the room?
Yeah.
Did you ask for a new room?
No. We're like, oh, whatever, blood, who cares?
Mm-hmm.
We ended up, hanging out afterwards at the strip club. It was pretty cool.
Yeah, Virginia Beach?
Yeah.
Nice.
It was a neat place. It was just outside Virginia Beach for the hotel.
Did the guy have a problem with his set? Like, why?
I legit don't remember. I pulled him away. He was drunk and he fucked off.
Yeah, I got threatened. I was at LOL and did a 9/11 joke, and this guy just yelled back at me like, "I'll fucking kick your ass." And then I started going back at him, and I looked, and it was like a midnight show. He was all alone, drunk, and a big guy with a beard.
Holy shit.
And, you know, I was pretty new there at the time. I didn't know what the deal was, if management was going to protect me or what.
Did they protect you guys? Oh, don't name clubs. You should bleep that out, but the club name, but...
No, they actually did. They were really good about it. Management really? Came over to him, yeah, and were like, told him to, you know, be quiet or get out. They were on it.
Holy hell.
Yeah, I was very relieved because I kept going with material. I like laid off them and I kept going with material. But all the while, I'm holding the mic, I'm doing material, and I'm thinking of what I'm going to do if he runs at me. And I have it all figured out.
What were you going to do?
All right, so this is what you do if someone's attacking you on stage. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to take the mic. I'm going to toss the mic like a softball. Just toss it to the person running at you. Then you grab the mic stand like it's a bat.
And you slam it.
And you swing it around right at their head. And if you toss them the mic, they'll be distracted. They might like instinctively go to catch
the mic. Yeah.
So then I'll grab the stand, and hopefully it's a stand with one of those big metal bases.
That's great.
So I was doing material and like trying to make the audience feel less awkward.
Uncomfortable because you're being yelled at by some creep.
Yeah, and then I was like, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to smash him in the face with this mic stand.
Jesus Christ.
And then luckily, and he kept kind of, he heckled a couple more times, like, "I'll fly an airplane in your ass," like a couple things.
That's a pretty damn good
real heckle. Deep.
Yeah, it's great.
And then management came over and
kicked him out?
They didn't kick him out. They just told him to be quiet, and he was quiet. Then I was like pretty scared getting off stage.
Looking back, I pretty much performed at every club, and I've had hecklers at every single one, at least once.
Mm-hmm. I've never been scared. That's the most I've ever been scared.
I've been threatened, and I thought to myself, "Oh shit, this guy's gonna swing." Yeah. But I've never been scared, because each time I'm like, I'm on stage, there's a certain level of protection because you're in front of 30 people. No one's gonna like let someone get beat up in front of 30 people. You'd be like,
yeah, but you're also much more intimidating than me. I'm like a skinny, artsy-looking kid guy.
I just have a threatening vibe to me of like anger and sadness.
You got tattoos.
Oh, and some muscles.
Yeah, and you got some muscles. So
yeah, but you're taller than I am. How tall are you?
Just about 6 foot.
Oh,
that doesn't mean anything.
I'm 5'6".
Tall and skinny. It doesn't matter.
Doesn't?
So what's up with...
I'm bulky.
You have Salvador Dali on your arm? What's up with that?
I had a fever dream a couple years ago.
A fever dream?
Yeah, it was a fever dream.
What is a fever dream?
I don't know. It's something like a sense of... Again, this goes back to like challenging ideals here with everyone. Like the... how do I say this without sounding weird? But the...
You could sound weird. What is weird?
I don't know. I had...
Normies are weird.
A few dreams where like I'd seen things and like... Things that were just crazy. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, let me just get them tattooed in my body.
Just because of a dream.
Kind of.
What happened in the dream? Was Salvador Dali in the dream?
They were haunting memories and images. I don't want to go into detail, but Salvador Dali wasn't the dream.
Uh-huh. The dreams were haunted memories?
Kind of.
Real memories or like dream fabrications?
Things I saw.
Things you saw from your past or like hallucinations?
Hallucinations, I think. And they weren't drug-induced either. They were just normal dreams that just haunted me for a while. And I was just like, that's it. And I wanted to get some reprieve. It was odd.
So getting the tattoo?
It helped a little bit, psychologically.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
There's that sense of logic. I mean, and illogic where we're all like... So again, this goes back to spirituality. And I don't know how anyone feels about that crap or like that.
It's up to the interpreter.
Whatever you feel like you believe or whatever horseshit like that. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like that feeling for me. It gave me some kind of emotional reprieve.
Getting the tattoo or having the tattoo?
Getting the tattoos.
I don't have any tattoos.
I look kind of cool.
Is there something to getting a tattoo? Like, is there a bit of a cutter kind of thing?
No. If anything, I don't like the pain. I don't like the pain that comes with it. you just like the way you're improving your body. Like, it's like working out. You put them on and you kind of go like, oh, nice. And then people do. And I have gotten multiple comments, multiple women, multiple guys. I'm like, oh, they look nice. That kind of thing.
Right.
What do you, it's like going to the gym.
Yeah.
You do it because you want other people. Everyone says it's for them, but it's not. It's kind of for other people, to be honest. Well, if it was up to any of us, we really would all be fat. You only go to the gym and work out
partially. I'm going to partially agree with you. Because, you know, if you eat too much, you feel uncomfortable.
That's true, too. Fine. You know, but if you do it to the point where it's just right, it's perfect.
Yeah. Right. Overeating a little bit.
Exactly.
It's nice.
It is nice.
So, you're being evasive. See, I called you mysterious when we first started,
and this is what I'm talking about. Admittedly, I am secretive and a little divisive and a little ambiguous in certain things. Yes.
Okay.
I've gotten that critique from a few girlfriends and a few people that have been close to me.
Uh huh.
Admittedly, it's who I am. I always evade a little bit.
Yeah. Why?
I don't know. What am I going to say?
You're going to evade that question?
I don't know. That's the thing. We're like, it's just natural. I think part of it was maybe the way I was raised. My mother was always very secretive. And because of that, I think that's what, subconsciously, I think that's what laid into me. Was
yeah.
The secrecy aspect of everything. Even if it's just nothing. It's just who I am. I just happen to be a secretive person. I keep multiple layers in multiple rooms, things like that.
Is your mom, your mom's Colombian, was she born here, or are you first
generation? No, I'm first generation. She was not born here in any way, shape, or form, but she was always very poor, so when you're poor, you have to control the most resources you can and mm-hmm. try and divide them up amongst the family that has nothing, so she did that the best she could, and she just happened to keep all the cards close to her chest.
Mm.
She never made a move that was public. She was always very secretive about everything.
What does she do for a living?
Laundromat attendant, believe it or not.
Uh-huh.
Ambition, she was never that, but she had still done everything she could to raise our family.
Yeah. Did she speak English?
No. Not she does, but it's like really bad English.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's still hard work, you know?
Yeah.
So you are first generation.
Yeah.
Paraffin.
Yeah.
What does that mean?
What do you mean?
Does that have a meaning, Paraffin?
As far as I know, no. It's just the last name. It's a surname that we have, and that's it. I never attached to the ideals of my cultural past, save for where I'm from. I mean, I did, but I didn't. I attached to the idea I'm Hispanic because it's who I am, but I've never attached myself to the ideal of
being Colombian?
I have, but then I haven't. I don't like the idea of being American. I don't like the idea of being 100% the other way either. It's just something I do.
Are you transcending nationality? Is that what's happening?
In the sense of what? Oh, that just sounds so douchey.
You just an earthling?
Oh, God. I just exist. How about that? Is that possible to say?
Have you been to Colombia?
Yeah, multiple times.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, it's great. It's a great place.
You go back?
Oh, yeah. Anytime I can afford it.
You have family there?
Yeah. My whole family's there. Only my nuclear family's here.
Oh, cool. What's it like? I've never been.
Some cousins too. It's amazing. My family's from the mountains, so like it's incredible. I mean, there's wildlife, there's Amazonian forest, there are giant plants, things that fit over your head.
How's the culture
bugs
different?
And scorpions that will kill you. It's like living in a small town. That's what it was. Because they're from the mountains, so it's a small town. So right. It's basically it's literally like a small town feel. Same like a small town USA, only in the mountains of Colombia.
Is there a stand-up there?
There's a form of stand-up on television, yes. And it's more vaudevillian than it is stand-up generic. All the comics there and their stand-up comedy, it's vaudevillian, and even the political shows are a little more vaudevillian too. They have puppets, they use stuff like that for the Daily Show of Colombia.
Yeah.
To that format, to that effect, uses puppets. They even have blackface, which is weird.
Really?
Yeah, but it's not. I don't think they find it racist down there. It's weird.
Right. So it's more silly, almost like
British. Yes. That's a perfect way to describe it.
Yeah, British humor is more silly.
Yeah, it's more silly, or it's like I think British humor has things like their extremes. It's either super witty or super downplayed. It's odd.
Right, yeah.
Like the, what's that show? absolutely fabulous.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, same thing. We're like, mm-hmm. it's a mix of witty and also it's downplayed for some reason.
Right. So, do you mind if I ask you? I'm curious about the details of the attempted suicide.
Go ahead.
What? How did you do it?
I had I'd popped a bunch of pills and drugs, sleeping pills. Looking back, I didn't know what grade of sleeping pills I needed to use. Someone told me, they were like, yeah, you fucked up. You used over-the-counter stuff. So but I took like 30 pills. It was weird, and I woke up in the middle of the night. I thought I was going to die, and it felt like everything was irradiating from my body. It was an odd feeling. It was like the highest I've ever been.
Do you remember the thoughts going on in your head before you?
Yeah, I wanted to die. That's it. I didn't really want to live.
Where were you?
I was home. My apartment.
Do you have roommates?
Yeah, yeah.
Were they home at the time?
One was.
Did you want to reach out to them?
No. I didn't like them that much.
Mm-hmm.
I was just lonely. Going through this intense psychological change. I didn't have anyone to talk to. And, you know, I just went for it. It was a learning curve. I mean, I was like, looking back now, I'm like, I'm never going to do it ever. Yeah. Now it's like, oh, fuck that. That's never going to be something I do again.
Right.
But at the time, it was new to me. It seemed like a logical conclusion to this deep emotional and psychological change that I assumed was the end.
Well, at some point in your mind, it must have seemed rational.
Yeah. 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 I mean, that was part of it. Part of it too, it felt like, I was like, oh, this is the end for sure. This is so much intense change. And after my entire life, I've never had that much change at one time. It felt like a new beginning. So I felt like the end of a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the way I interpreted it logically. Where like, I was like, this is it. I'm done.
Had you had those thoughts before?
No, I mean, we all get depressed.
Yeah.
But it was the first time I ever acted on them. Mm-hmm. I mean, any comic can tell you they fucking get mind-numbingly depressed, right? It's not.
Yeah, most of us.
Hard to believe. Yeah. We all get sad, and even suicidal a little bit, but you kind of go, you brush those thoughts off like, eh, who cares?
Yeah, there's this essay where this person jumped off of, you hear this a lot, actually. People that jump off buildings or whatever, they always regret it right when they jump.
Really?
Yeah, almost always.
How do they know if they don't live?
Well, we only hear from the ones that live.
Oh, so the second they jump off.
Yeah, if they've lived, they said, right when I jumped and I knew I couldn't pull myself back, I instantly regretted it.
That's interesting.
Did you have any of that?
No. No, I really wanted to die. At the time. It was a lot.
After you downed all the pills, were you like relieved? Were you just like, all right, now I have to wait?
Yeah, that's what I remember thinking, like, oh, come on, just die already.
Mm-hmm. There wasn't a part of you that wanted to do something that you always wanted to do before you ended it?
No.
I think that's one of the reasons why I wouldn't, is because there's so much. I'd be like, all right, well, then if I'm going to die, I got to do this because I've always wanted to do this. Then I got to do that.
No, it's not the same thing. Don't forget, because I did it out of depression. So right. When you do that kind of stuff out of depression, it's different. It's a different feeling.
Yeah, it's just, it overtakes you like a flu or something.
Kind of. You, because you're depressed, you're less willing to do stuff.
Right.
So everyone always says, I'd rob a bank for it. I'm like, you wouldn't.
No.
Because you feel the weight of everything on you. This weight that comes with depression.
So you took all these pills and then you woke up in the middle of the night.
Yeah, I didn't know that is pretty much only a cry for help. I thought it was a for sure way to kill myself at the time. And I woke up in the middle of the night pissed, and it was a weird feeling I got. It was almost like I was high. And then I woke up the next morning. I remember thinking, fuck!
Mm-hmm.
And that was on.
Like I didn't succeed.
Yeah.
I'm still alive.
Yeah.
So what'd you do?
I lived. I mean, what do you say?
Well, you ended up getting some help.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. But that was with therapy and stuff like that. But that, I mean, it was funny because these, someone called mobile crisis on me. Uh-huh. And
someone found out what you'd done?
Kind of, yeah. And to this day, I don't know who it was. And they called and they came. And I didn't know how the questions were formatted or stuff like that. And these guys were asking me questions like, are you depressed? I'm like, yeah. And they're like, are you suicidal? I'm like, yeah. And they were like, well, legally, we have to take you now. I'm like, oh, what?
Right, because you admitted that.
Yeah. And actually, funny enough, I had a girl over at the time.
Wait, and you had a girl over at the time?
Yeah, they were asking me questions. I just let them in. I was just depressed. I was like, oh, yeah, whatever. Who cares?
Oh, wait, not the same time you took all the pills.
No, no, no. I had a girl over I was hooking up with at the time.
Was it the next day?
What?
When was it the next day?
No, this was like a week later.
Oh, okay.
And I was just, I happened to have be hooking up with someone at the time, and I was like, holy shit.
Mm-hmm.
It was a very funny story. I'm like, and then I had this big hunting knife in my house, and I had that go, I ran to go hide it.
Yeah.
So I didn't want the cops to find it. And then the girl had taken it and hid it somewhere, and she was like, yeah, my sister gets depressed too, don't worry. And she hid it for me, and I was like, oh, thank you, sweetie, you're so sweet.
That's a keeper.
Yeah, she was nice.
Girls that'll hide a knife for you.
Her name was Rachel. She's Jewish, and the first time we hooked up, I came inside her, and she happened to be birth control. We didn't use a condom, and it was the first day we hooked up too. It was a fun time with her.
Did you plan B it?
No, she was on birth control.
Oh, she was on birth. Mm-hmm. Did you just had a little slip up?
No, no, no. I've never, thank God, I've never gotten an abortion.
So did you post on Facebook about the suicide? Is that why someone found out and
yeah,
called?
Yeah, there was.
Yeah, that's how I found out about it. You posted pictures and stuff, and then they brought you in an institution, right?
Yeah, yeah, because again, the cops, they had to get involved, so I was forced to go.
Mm-hmm.
And they were like, if you don't come willingly, we're going to have you arrested. And I'm like, fuck.
Oh, that's how, I was wondering. Okay, so
yeah, the police had to get involved apparently, just because of three questions I answered incorrectly.
Right.
I should have been like, "Yeah, I'm depressed. I'm not suicidal."
So there's a law on the books that says if
I yeah, yeah, something like that. Yeah, yes. Wow. These are people. They're therapists, so they have to take you.
Mm-hmm. So if you said no, I'm not. You're not taking me to the institution. You would
no, just... I try. I said no, you're not taking me. They were like, "Yeah, we're calling the cops." Then you they literally said that.
Then you end up in a cell.
Yeah. Funny enough. Or the prison ward of a fucking psychiatric hospital, which I can't imagine is any better.
You're right. Yeah. So what was the institution like? What did they do?
It was creepy. I was in there for like 3 hours, and it was, for those 3 hours, I was like, no, thank you. This is not for me at all.
You were only in there for 3 hours?
Yeah, for a few hours. I was able to charm my way out of there, thank God, because I'm charismatic as fuck. But the, I'm likable.
You started running material on the shrinks?
No, I started just bullshitting with them and laughing, making them laugh, and they all kind of joked and laughed with me, and they're like, oh, he's not a real threat to himself. He's not or others.
Or he's a really good actor.
One of the two. I was just sad. It was just like, I guess we're just being, as comics, we're used to being so bluntly honest. I'm like, oh, you were suicidal, whatever. But it's not, we're not for real suicidal.
Right.
We just feel suicidal, which is different than being suicidal.
Right.
It's more like being like, thinking to yourself, oh, I want to kill myself, is different than thinking to yourself, I'm going to go buy a gun to kill myself with. Those are two different emotions. One is more proactive than the other.
Yeah. But you did. You did try.
Yeah, but that was a week before. I mean, at that point, it was like the nexus. Again, the nexus point. I broke through. I lived, so it didn't matter.
So when you lived and you woke up, you were disappointed.
A little bit, but then at the same time, I was like, okay, well, this is it. I tried that. That's not going to work. Now to do something else. And I never really, I've been felt suicidal after that, but I'm like, looking back, I'm like, I'm never going to act in those feelings again.
Mm-hmm.
I can say clearly in my head, I'm like, I'm not going to do it now.
Yeah.
Or ever again.
Mm-hmm.
Just part of it. Part of it's embarrassment if you're not going to succeed. But part of it's like, no. What's the fucking? What are you going to kill yourself for? That's stupid.
Right.
I It just sounds stupid.
And it's also like what I tell myself, with, I'm sure I've said this before on the podcast because I just end up repeating myself, but if I get really depressed, I'll think, all right, what has changed in my life? Because I was happy a few days ago.
Exactly. Part of it's chemical. I mean, even if you took pills all day, you're fine, whatever, antidepressants, who gives a shit? But it's not just that. It's more like you kind of you have to step back and get out of your own head and be like, no, fuck that. Someone told me once the only real cure for depression is volunteering and helping others, which is funny. You would think like that.
Right.
It's literally that and lifting weights, like the two things that like are legitimately on paper effective to cure depression.
Do you consider stand-up comedy as a service in that way?
No, hell no. Why don't? There's a sense of selfishness there that's crazy big.
I kind of feel like it is. Like when I make a room laugh, that's such a gift to them.
Yeah, but they don't. There's also a sense of, maybe because I'm interpreting it more as a sense of selfishness, where I'm being selfish, me, the person, because I want these feelings of endorphins, and I want this happiness, and I want this and that.
Yeah, so but what if you flipped it around and were like, I'm here for them?
I don't know. I'm not dissuading your interpretation. It's your interpretation. You can interpret it whatever you want.
Yeah.
Who am I to tell you one thing or the other?
But aren't you there for them more than you're there for
technically,
you?
Yes. Fine. Fair enough. 30 people are here to see us, to watch us, versus one of me is there for the 30 people.
All right. I have proof here. I'm going to prove it to you that you're there for them more than you. Check this out. Because if you're not doing well, if the audience is not on board, what do? Go to a bit that you know works.
Yeah, but then you also, same thing the other way around too. When you know it's not working, sometimes you'll lash out at the audience.
Yeah, but that's never good.
Still though, and that does happen sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, but it doesn't work. It doesn't get them on your board. It doesn't get them on board with you. Unless you're Bill Burr opening for Metallica. That's the only time it's ever worked.
I've seen it work either way.
You have?
Yeah. I've seen it work, the angry turn. I've even done an angry turn and it's worked.
You did. So what made it work?
The energy, the impulse, the sense of self.
Yeah.
I don't know. There could be a myriad of reasons. I mean, there's no real one defining factor to say this is why this worked here and this now, and maybe why it didn't work or won't work later on. Just mm-hmm. for some reason, that crowd is open to that interpretation of stand-up.
Right. Maybe because you probably, like, you have this jovial comedic thing about possibly you.
But some of the crowds are rowdy, so I've lashed out at them and they've listened to, like, okay,
right?
Sometimes you have to be rowdy, and if they're rowdy, you can be a tough asshole and you kind of go fuck off, and they kind of go, all right, let me chill out with this guy.
Yeah.
Part of it's a threat thing where they feel a little threatened and they're kind of going, all right, let me just listen to this guy and see what he has to say.
Yeah. So you seem good now.
Oh yeah, more than good. It's not even a question. I'm not saying it was I'm not something as fucking weak as like, oh, you know, the dark time in my life. It was just like something I did and it happened. That's it. It's not a big deal. I never saw it as a big deal. I just more saw it like, oh, it's just something I did and that happened.
Yeah.
And I think that's anyone to just interpret that kind of like, if there is a dark time in your life, I think that's what you should see it. Is not, I'm sad. More like, this is something I did at the time, and it happens.
Yeah.
As anyone should.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a real kind of life thing of, like, for it, where I was sad, and this happened, and I did that, and I shouldn't have, and that's it.
Yeah. And you seem pretty good.
Well, yeah. I mean, we still get depressed. I mean, all of us still get sad, and we feel downtrodden, but it's never been to the point. I've never gone to the point where I've been suicidal ever since past that point.
Yeah.
And I think that was a learning lesson for me of like, I'm not going to do this. Like, that's just weird.
That was like way too dramatic.
Yeah. This is like, it really was like, oh, what the fuck is wrong with me? Fucking bitch.
You're not that much of a drama queen.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, I have a lot of debt, which I talk about openly on stage, and
that student debt?
Credit card debt. Mm-hmm. I mean, I talk about it all the time, and I talk about being depressed about it, but I'm like, who gives a shit? The fuck is the worst that can happen? Mm-hmm. There's nothing terrible. Like, you put these weird thoughts in your head, like, and you're like, wait a second, who gives a fuck? Nothing fucking matters. A bad breakup, okay, it's gonna...
You get over it.
It takes, you know, it could take months, it could take a year, if that happens. You know, I've had a bad breakup like that before. But after a while, you kind of go, oh, yeah, I'm fine.
How long was that relationship?
Like a year plus. It wasn't that long.
So that's a long-term girlfriend. You said earlier you never had one.
I don't really count that. It's a long story. Whatever. you know, I've had long-term relationships end badly, and it's taken me months to get over it.
Yeah.
And, you know, one time I had a girl say, look me in the eyes, and she was like, I regret getting into a relationship with you. And I was like, oh, well, that was painful.
Mm-hmm.
But it, you know, it stabbed me a little bit, but I kind of go, all right, well, that time to move on. Who cares?
Right. You always move on.
You do. You really do.
Yeah.
As much as you fuck around, you always move on.
Time is magic.
It's that time is the best thing in the world.
Yeah.
And you grow as a person, and part of you kind of learns, you're like, oh, I'm fine without this person, or I'm fine without that thing in my life, or I'm fine with this. I'm fine with $50,000 in debt. That's how much I owe.
Mm-hmm. You ran up that much credit card debt?
Oh, my God. I was just bad with money for a while.
What, were you living lavishly?
Oh, it was amazing.
What were you buying?
Everything and everything.
Yeah? Like, were you just going out for food and drinks?
Or it was incredible. I lived like a king for a year.
Uh-huh. Why were you doing that?
I don't fucking know. I was just spending. I didn't really think long term. I was like, oh, I'll pay this off. Don't worry. It's not a good thing. It's not a bad thing.
Right.
And then after a while, I was like, oh, I'm not going to pay this off.
Right, but it wasn't like you were buying cars. And
No. Fuck, if anything, I wish I've taken DMV lessons. Although I spent $5,000learning how to fly an airplane, so I can do that. Don't have the license for it, yeah.
Nice.
So I can fly an airplane right now.
That's good. You never know when we
you're fucking around, but yeah.
But we're trapped on an island here. If they close the bridges and tunnels,
there's like, fucked, yeah.
I'm going to call you and say, hey, let's...
Yeah, but then where the fuck are we going to get an airplane from?
We'll find one.
All the airports.
LaGuardia's on the
all
island.
The airports are outside near Manhattan.
LaGuardia's on the island, right? We got LaGuardia Airport here.
We would have to get a small airplane, but yeah.
We can do it.
I don't know how to fly big planes.
You're our only hope.
Yeah.
Is there another comic that knows how to fly?
No, good point. Fair enough.
You could save the whole comedy community.
Right there in one plane. But I also know how to fly only small planes.
All right, so
I can't fly big planes.
If there's a limited number of people, will you take me?
Yes, of course.
Because it is my idea, after all.
Yeah, so you have to, like, you know, live up to it.
All right. I have to be good to you?
Basically.
So what's next for you?
What do you mean, what sense?
You got some shows coming up?
Yeah. I have...
Where do people find out about these shows?
I put them on Twitter. I put them on my Instagram all the time.
Okay.
Which Twitter? I'll be doing here.
I'll put a link. Links in the show notes. I'll put a link to your Twitter.
How many viewers do you get?
Viewers? None.
Listeners. Listeners.
Depends. It varies on the episode. Yeah.
How? Tell me.
It really depends. It really varies by episode. It's pretty wild, actually. Yeah.
What's the most downloads you've ever gotten? How about that?
Per episode, like total?
Yeah.
It's maybe like 13,000.
Holy shit, really?
Yeah. Total. I mean, it's been total.
It's been
a podcast for like over 2 years.
Now. I mean, per episode. How about that?
It really varies wildly. It's kind of crazy. And then if you look at one of the earlier episodes, I was doing these fake interviews. Like I did fake interviews with Louis C.K. and Jerry Seinfeld.
Shut up.
Yeah, it wasn't really them.
No, of course not.
Tons of hits.
People still like, really?
Yeah. So if you search for Jerry Seinfeld on podcasts, this podcast comes up.
Shut up.
I'm not kidding, yeah. So that, you know, added a lot. So it's hard to know.
That's funny.
Yeah, I used to get angry emails. That's not real.
You're not talking to Louis C.K. Why would he fucking go to your podcast?
And it's like, did you listen to what we were talking about? We were talking about drinking blood from the youth.
Would he really say that?
Well, Daniel, thanks for sharing your story.
This is a lot of fun, actually.
Yeah.
And I've been, by the way, listeners, I've been sitting on this couch the entire time.
Sitting or lying?
Lying. It's been great. My Twitter handle is at Daniel J. Parafan. And my Instagram is at Daniel J. Parafan. And of course, Facebook, same thing. I have a monthly show at the Creek in the Cave. And, you know, hit me up if you ever need anything or free tickets. What? Take care.
Nice. Thanks for doing this.